Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Well, a beautiful afternoon for a good game of football now, and it looks as though we have the makings of it.
Barnes has come in. Oh, a fine goal by John Barnes. That's a beauty.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Watford Buzz podcast. And I'm here on my own today. Matt and Tom are not available. Tom is in the States on holiday, much deserved. And Matt has got a birthday celebration to attend. So yeah, just me today, which is a little bit odd. It's the first time we've done this since lockdown time when I was doing the opposition reports. I can't remember what we called it. An opposition preview, perhaps. But yeah, we're back. So something different today. I'll go through this. I'm not sure how long it's going to be. I'm sure you don't want to hear me ramble on my own the whole time without that feedback. But to ease that transition a little bit more, I have asked us some questions for this episode. And I think this will be, you know, it'll be a very question-heavy episode. We're going to talk a little bit about the game to begin with. I'm going to answer these questions. I haven't actually looked at all of them yet. There's a couple here that I haven't seen. So I'm sure we'll cover some things about the game with these questions. But we'll start off just with a little bit of a discussion on that game there that we just had to witness again at Millwall. Not very often we're finding these games particularly enjoyable. And another tough day for Watford and the away fans at the Den. Yeah, where do you start with the football, with the game? Obviously, there were some changes to the lineup. We'll kind of go over real quick just because that did feel like it was a significant talking point. There were some questions there. We did have the return of Vakuum Bio up front. You know, a little bit of time since we got to see him in that central position. He's obviously had some injury concerns. We've seen Rajovic there and Emmanuel Dennis, but Bio back in. Dennis shifted out to the right wing. And then we had a change at centre-back. We had the pairing of Siriata and Wesley Hoot. And, of course, the return of Jeremy Ngakia. So let's kind of go through this one at a time. We'll start from the back, I guess, because you know this is one that was heavily discussed in the build-up over the last few weeks. This discussion of right-back and the mystery of Ryan Andrews and what's kind of happened to him. You know, Val's been relatively clear, at least he's presented a clear opinion or a clear reason for why Andrews isn't playing. There's been a lot of discussion about that, whether that's true, whether it's not. You know, even to the point where we've even had Ryan Andrews' dad chipping in with some of the discourse as well. Still not 100% clear, is it? You know, I think you can take elements of what Ismail is saying as fair. You know, he is the coach. You can use that as a reference point for this decision. But at the same time, it seems like there's something a little bit more, because there have been times where he has played, and there's certainly been times we feel like he would have been a better option, especially when we had, you know, Tom Dalibashiru playing out of position and occupying that space. But it was the return of Jeremy Ngakia. And, you know, I do have to say, I actually thought he did okay for the most part. I've been mixed on Ngakia, as I think many of us have. We've seen some improvement this season, but you know, the thing we haven't seen improvement on, whilst we might have seen a couple of elements of his game, I think have become a little bit more stable, especially in terms of possession. I think he's not quite as loose as he used to be. He looks like he's gained some understanding positionally and kind of how to operate in this team. He seems to be the only right back that Ismail really trusts to play that kind of inverted position to the same degree that we saw at the beginning of the season. But the one thing he hasn't improved in this season is availability. And, you know, he's missed too much time. Obviously, he's signed a new contract as well this year. So interesting one. But yeah, so Ngakia started and Ryan Andrews on the bench. Questionable. There are some questions around that. Emmanuel Dennis shifted out to that right-hand side. Obviously, we were unsure what was going to happen with that groin injury that caused him to come off in the previous game. He did start from the right-hand side. His positioning, his approach, or the use of Dennis in this game is something I want to talk about real quick, because, you know, we've seen how effective he can be from wide areas. I think particularly from the left, I like him from the left a little bit more, just to kind of, you know, channel him towards goal. It's where he seems to shine. And the thing that confused me and surprised me a little about this one is how deep he was playing. You know, you look at his heat map as well, it's all kind of centered around the halfway line. His starting position was very, very deep. Whether that was trying to trigger that press from McNamara and trying to get him to come in, and even Duncan Watmore as well, and be a little bit tighter and hopefully trying to find some space to exploit. You know, a Millwall team that's quite happy to sit a little bit deep in that 4-4-2 shape and try and contain. It wasn't really working, though. You know, he did start to get a little bit more active in the forward positions as the game went on, but tough one for him again. We don't seem to have a plan for him particularly, and it showed again in this game. It's disappointing for me. You know, he had some... He had, I think it was one shot in the game, got the ball 62 times. He did create four key passes, which is probably kind of the highlight of his performance in terms of offensive output. He lost the ball 20 times, turned over 20 times. It was okay, but he's not really kind of giving us that threat and boost that we hoped he would when he joined back on loan. And then Bayo, what do we think of his performance? You know, we're struggling to really find that threat again, aren't we? You know, he had a couple of decent chances. I think he had two shots, both off target, though, from... They should have been good positions. One should have been the goal, shouldn't it? I think it was our best shot of the game, or kind of best chance created of the game in a pretty cagey affair, really. Neither team had great throughout the game. And Bayo's shot there was really... Or opportunity was kind of the best one we had. But we're just not kind of finding him much, were we? He had a couple of moments where he dropped deep and picked up the ball and kind of got into some possession and was able to play somewhat. But... yeah, nothing really clear-cut at all, and a little bit frustrating yet again. So, you know, the reinforcements didn't help massively. Obviously, we had Georgie Shakvatadze was injured. He wasn't involved in the squad. We did have subs come on. You know, we did get to see Ryan Andrews eventually. Tondele Bashiru came on. Kone came on. We had Rajovic again as well, as a kind of cameo appearance from Matthias Martins as well, trying to snatch something towards the end. In terms of the performance, though, it was a poor goal to concede. The free kick was a poor one. You know, not Ben Hamer's best day. He had a couple of moments as well. He looked a little bit rattled early on. You know, we had that loss of possession. I thought the centre-backs did okay. They're probably kind of a highlight for me. There were moments from Asprilla as well, you know, had a little bit of quality and almost kind of shone through and gave us a few opportunities, but just a struggle again. You know, we look like we're really struggling to dominate, to kind of have any extended periods of control. We clearly have a weakness in dealing with pressure, and I think teams are going to start to push on that even more. The kind of blood is in the water there, and it's something that I think we have to address quite quickly. We talked about the possibility of us being a more direct team at times, having that kind of verticality to your game to shoot forwards and play a bit more aggressively, and, you know, a little bit more gung-ho for sure. But you have some assets there you can use. You know, you've got some mobility in the wide areas. Using this game as an example, Ken Semmer and Emmanuel Dennis should be able to offer you something across that front line if you kind of stretch that play a little bit. You've got the physicality in midfield to kind of win those second duels if you have to. And you've got a left foot in Wesley Hoot that might actually give you some precision on that kind of play. It's obviously not necessarily going to be our bread and butter, but I'm surprised we're not looking for, you know, alternate options in these sorts of games. I thought that week in between that's kind of talked about with the double sessions and the extra bit of time we had to prepare didn't really show at all, to be honest with you. So yeah, disappointing. But let's get into some questions, because I don't want to just kind of harp on about the game and have to kind of recover these things as we get into the questions. Okay, so let's start off with Adam. He says, why do you think our home form has been so poor since Norwich? You know, I think the home form is an issue for us. The way that we adjusted, you know, when we started the season, we had this kind of this intent to play a more possession base, a lot more freedom and fluidity in forward positions. It lent itself to controlling games, but it was exposing. And, you know, we made a mentality shift when we brought Jake Livermore in. We became a little bit more of a counter-attacking unit. We had a run of games that suited that style in particular. And that's kind of where we saw that benefit really start to come through. You know, Swansea away being one. These are the kind of games that we capitalized on that mentality shift. I think the home form has really suffered. We've lost that confidence in dictating play a little bit. And I think our mentality shift is not flexible enough, if that makes sense, to truly have that kind of duality in play. When we don't really have a particular kind of style of play at home and then change to be away from home. We're just kind of this in the middle of this kind of no man's land style of play right now. And it just doesn't lend itself well to home fixtures as far as I can see. I'm not seeing enough flexibility there. And it's taken a toll. Obviously, the added pressure of being at home and, you know, kind of the fans are getting a little bit disgruntled. Obviously, this all plays a part. But home form's really concerning, really concerning. So that's kind of the biggest thing that has to be addressed. Obviously, it's a complex issue to address and there's lots of factors that come into doing so. But yeah, I mean, I just think we haven't found that balance and the home fixtures are just tougher because of that. Next question, Paul Richards, which of these players would you keep at the end of the season? The end of the season is a really interesting question because the way this squad can look, you know, after a couple of weeks of the window opening, you know, we really don't know where it's going to be. You kind of look at some of these players and there's a few that you have an idea you might be able to keep hold of, ones that you kind of assume we're going to be moved on. You know, I think Yasser Espria is as good as gone. I think we're going to have to cash in on him to really keep ourselves going financially. You know, that is going to be crucial. The player turnover is going to be crucial. How crucial that is will decide the future of Ismail Kone as well. I think Kone is one we'd like to keep for next season. However, I think that's not going to be decided until that window's closed. I think that might be one that's either, you know, maybe a club comes in with a very good bid and we decide that early. Wouldn't surprise me if that's one that kind of lasts a little bit longer through the window and we're just not kind of sure what happens with him. But in terms of keeping, you know, I think Ryan Andrews, I think you want to keep around a little bit longer. You know, you've got him down to a new contract and that's something you've got to work with and you have improved that value. And then maybe the season after, you're potentially looking at a sale for him there. You know, the staples of that team, I know there's questions around it, but I am pleased with Georgi Chatfitadze's signing. I think he's going to be useful for us, especially next year, and we lose a little bit more of that offensive quality and that spark. You know, we might see a little bit more and perhaps the best of him. I didn't think I'd say it a year ago, but Wesley Hoot has become somewhat of a key figure. You know, he's been quite good defensively this year for us, but he is unique. His use of the ball, his possession qualities are quite unique, and I think that's something you can work off. Obviously, we need to kind of support him with an adequate backup, but, you know, I quite like him there. And then really, there's, you know, Edo Kembe, I think, is a good option. Without just kind of painstakingly going through each individual player, there are some pieces, but there's going to be a lot of debate in, I'd say, behind the scenes, you know, amongst that kind of recruitment squad building section of the club. And also, as fans, kind of, you can make arguments for and against many of them. I don't think, apart from the ones I mentioned, and even there's a couple of question marks, I think most will be kind of in the mix for potentially staying or going. But, you know, the real question is, how do we replace the ones that go? And what do we do with the ones that stay? It's a tough one to really know the answer to right now, but it's one that's going to become very important in not long at all. Okay, other questions moving on. And this is from Django, by the way. Will you make a vow's man management? Andrew's not starting, Kone and Kiembe getting subbed early against Huddersfield. Oh, sorry, are both concerning. In retrospect, it seems like he dealt with loser poorly too. Yeah, I mean, look, it's something that became an issue at West Brom in terms of that man management style. I think there's lots that in his past, did a little bit of digging into his past a while ago before he signed for us, or before he kind of joined Watford, sorry. There was lots of mixed opinions. I think the guys that loved him, but there was some feeling of exclusion from some players, you know, the ones that he wasn't too keen on. Think Reece Healy when he was here. Imran Loser, obviously, I think there were some elements, personality clashes, which didn't lend itself to kind of being a situation that's going to last very long, at least in a positive manner. Andrews, you know, I'd be interested to see. I know there's some comments from his dad and so on, but I would be interested to hear, which we're probably not going to, of course, but I'd be interested to hear what Andrews' opinion is, how fairly the situation has been explained to him, how well and how, you know, kind of how clearly justified that decision has been might have a big impact on his thoughts about it. So it's hard to say. Kone and Kembe getting subbed off, you know, I think thing is with those two, I don't think they were particularly, Kembe struggled in that game against Huddersfield, I will say, but I think it was more about the fact these are players that are returning. Kone has a calf injury. He still has a calf injury from what I understand. Kembe had just returned and probably didn't, you know, if you're going to take anyone off, you can kind of justify taking some minutes out of his game. They were kind of unfortunate to be the two that were hooked to overall send a message in that game, really. I think that's kind of more of the point of that one. But, you know, these are questions we have to keep an eye on now, because something we really talked as a positive from when Val first got here, and we started to see a little bit of run of form, and you know, had that unbeaten run. It was the personality of the team, the character, the togetherness of the team that really seemed to be shining through. And you know, as time's gone on, it seems that's kind of trickled away a little bit, and there's much more questions, or many more questions being asked from there. Okay, this is from Duncan. Duncan, now this is in regards to shape, formation, tactics. How would you change our approach? I'd go 4-4-2. None of our strikers can play up front alone effectively, and Dennis is too rusty to play wide. Change our approach. You know, look, I think 4-4-2. Understand. I don't see us going with the kind of offensive-minded option, though. He's listed out a formation here which includes Asprilla, Martins on the wings, and Bio and Dennis up front. I think sometimes 4-4-2 is a double-edged sword. Sometimes you can be very offensively-minded. Sometimes it can be very much the opposite. Just because you're playing with two strikers, you might still be sacrificing offensive threat with those wingers. You want those wide players. Oftentimes are going to in the more, you know, modern game, it's going to be those wider midfielders that offer you that use of the ball in, you know, possession, work rate, defensively. They kind of have a more important job off the ball in a sense. They have to be a little bit more versatile, I think, to properly execute that. Now, you do have, obviously there are examples of that not being the case, but if I was trying to interpret what Valerian Ismail 4-4-2 would be, I'd be a little bit concerned it'd be too negative. But I understand what you're saying about the forwards. I think the forwards, the strikers are issues in that sense. You know, I'd agree that we'd benefit from someone a little bit more, a little closer, maybe a little bit more offensively minded, and finding ways to help that central figure, whether that's a striker, someone a little bit further off them, you know, a more advanced number 10, or a little bit of closer wing support. In terms of how I'd like to see us kind of approach games, I touched on it earlier, but you know, looking back at Ismail's successful periods, and you watch that Barnsley team, and it's just so different to what we see here. You know, he inherited a team that had some areas of quality, but it was a young, athletic, hungry team. It suited itself so well to that style of football that he incorporated, this quick, vertical, aggressive, reckless at times, but positive approach that kind of pushed him into that playoff position. It was admirable. I'm not sure if he has the fitness, the depth, and not depth in quality, just depth in terms of just bodies that are up to a reasonable standard to compete and create that team that's, you know, more than the sum of its parts, which is what he really did at Barnsley, and I think what attracted so many clubs to him at the time, and what ultimately landed him that job at West Brom. I think the difficulty is, I'm not sure if we're perfectly set for it, but we're at the point now where I'd like to see it. You know, I think one thing as fans, we feel that it's got stale somewhat. But you know, I we've had this conversation before in terms of
selling a little or a lot. Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Assessing the culture of a club and how you can tap into that, you know, for positive reasons, and also how you can, you know, maybe step into some negative areas as well if you're not careful. And I think one thing that most fan bases appreciate, but I think particularly at Watford, something you can really, you can kind of go back to the Graham Taylor era to really kind of find its way into our DNA, is that high energy, heart on your sleeve, underdog style approach, no matter what level we're playing at, no matter what area of the league we should be in. And I think that sort of high intensity counter-pressing team, whilst it might have some negatives, it might have some drawbacks, it might expose us somewhat, I think it would go a long way to changing the feeling of the team, of the ground, or the fan base, having a little bit of atmosphere and allowing you to get behind the players a little bit, see a little bit of heart from the players, even if it's artificial in the manner in which they're playing. I think it would be quite good to see, and it'd be much different to what we're witnessing now, where, as I said earlier, we're in that kind of no man's land of approach, and it's hurting us. So yeah, I hope that answers the question there for you, Duncan. Ed J, who's to blame for the form dip? Foul, players, owner, lack of support, recruitment? Can we avoid a relegation dogfight? Is the new norm and culture of underachieving... Is this the new norm and culture of underachieving, or something else? Tired legs, game pile up, hard preseason, not enough players. I mean, I think it's a combination, and you kind of pointed out quite well a lot of those potential factors at play. I do think that you have to have some accountability, of course, as the head coach. Same with the players. Now, ultimately, I think the owner, it falls to me at the owner, as a general statement, because, you know, the lack of support and recruitment is definitely a huge aspect. I don't believe for a second, in fact, I know that the current coaching staff were expecting more help in specific areas to be able to facilitate the game plan they presented to the club when they interviewed for the job, and they weren't able to do that because they don't have the players at their disposal to properly kind of fulfill that, or at least kind of get close to that aspiration. So it's 100% those things. You know, depth as well is a massive thing. It's not just fatigue that gets us to where we are. It does have an impact, though. We've got players that are playing hurt. You know, even Emmanuel Dennis coming off of the week, He's playing out of necessity, mismatch of the squad, lots of things that really kind of play into it. And, you know, a culture of underachieving, I think there's still, we hope that Ismail kind of got rid of that somewhat, or at least started to address it. And I do think he has, but there is still that underlying feeling of complacency around underachieving. That's something that really, really has to change. So it's a good question. Don't have all the answers for you yet, Ed. I'm still trying to figure that out myself, but I think you're kind of on the right track there with that question. Okay. Watford Data Hub. Also, side note, he's posted some good graphics, some good stuff on Watford. So go give him a follow. He's at Watford Data. Why has Gino not pulled the trigger this year? 10 games was all it took for Rob Edwards. Why is this another man who's been given the power? Good question. I think, again, in terms of the power he has, how much of this is down to necessity? You know, we're in a very strange situation off the field. The off-the-field stuff I find much more concerning than the head coach personally. Obviously, we've got Nani right now in that director of football role. Ben Manga and Helena Costa have gone. Giaretta's still there. And you've also got Ismail and Gino and Duxbury in the room when it comes to recruitment, for one. So, you know, power, it's shifted somewhat, but we don't really kind of clear definitions of who's doing what and what's going on, as always. But even more so now, there's a lot of kind of half jobs and crossovers that we can't really differentiate between. And I think one of the big issues is that he has got a longer contract. You know, I think that is obviously one thing. But I wouldn't necessarily say it's like even a positive approach. And by positive, I don't mean something that we're necessarily happy with, but I'm not sure it's a decision that was made to give him more power because we're trying to shift approach, and it's a thought we've really kind of, you know, discussed, and we've decided we need to address and kind of give that coach more power. I think it's also a level of, well, we haven't really got anyone else doing it now to the same degree that was happening previously. You know, apparently Ismail still had that power when Manga and Costa were there, but that was part of the problem too, because it just didn't really, no one really had that clear definition, and you know, we could get into the reasons why they left, but that's kind of something different. So you know, that's one factor in terms of why he has that power. I'm not overly convinced it's a good thing. In some aspects, in some ways, I think it is, in terms of authority and having input. I think input's important. Control, total control, not so much. I don't think he has that, but I question how effective his input can be when there's such disarray in those other supporting areas. Also, big factor in why he's not sacked him, the five-year contract's a big one. You know, financial element is huge. We, of course, offered him and some of his members of staff 5-year deals, and that's something we have to honour should he leave and not get another job straight away. So it's tough. And then from there, you've got to bring someone else in, and that's another financial package you've got to put together. And this is a club that didn't invest into key areas of the team in the January transfer window, where that was kind of when we realistically still had a chance of potentially getting towards playoffs. That was the time to do it, and we really didn't. So, you know, it might be a case of him just not really wanting to do that and not feeling we can. Also, too, you know, we don't know what Gino thinks in this regard, but he could either think that, A, we're still capable of reaching playoffs, you know, there could be that level of delusion, or he could think that we're not going to go down, and, you know, he wants to wait and do address this in the summer and, you know, maybe give Ismail a chance. The inactivity this time has probably never, it's probably never been as tempting as it is right now to Gino to keep the manager, keep the head coach on. But tough kind of one to really pinpoint, but again, it's a little bit of a mixture. Okay. Couple more still. We've got the question here from Yellows. What style of play is this squad suited to? Kind of what I touched on with that, a little bit more direct approach. You know, his Titan at Barnes, the 3-4-3. Not necessarily we're best suited for it, but I think it would bring some benefit. And kind of without going over all the reasons I just said, I would like to see that. In terms of suited to itself, though, it's not really suited to a particular one, because we have such a variety in profile of player and in the same position even. It's really hard to kind of pinpoint that. We have a mixture of talent and deficiencies, which makes it a hard one to really kind of nail down, which of course is one of the issues currently for the coach. So yeah, I can't really answer that one in a sense, because I don't think we have one. Next question, this is from Nick, which is a good question. What are some things you like about supporting Watford FC? Online supporters are miserable, yet we all keep following this team. There must be some reason why. So I know Nick is actually in the States as well, and I think he comments on his question there. I picked Watford FC simply because I used to live in Jaden Merritt's hometown. I keep at it because the team's got history, and let's face it, following Watford is never dull. My nearest MLS team is 3 hours away, where they charge $15 for a beer. I prefer morning coffee with Hive Live. I feel for you, Nick. As someone that is now currently a remote fan as well, it can be tough. What I will say, I guess, going there in person does, of course, give you that extra layer of attachment. And I really respect your effort to kind of be behind the team as someone that has like a loose connection, which kind of found Watford along the way. I think when things are going well or bad, there's a level of community in a smaller club like Watford that you're never going to find at one of the bigger clubs. You know, I don't think you can replicate that. So I would say persist. Obviously, we love having you as a Watford fan. So you got to roll through it with the rest of us. And whether it's the good times, the bad times, you're in it with a group of people that generally, you know, want the same thing. And there's always, as you say, it's never dull. It's never particularly boring. And we're a cyclical team. There are good times to come. We just don't know exactly when yet. So hang in there, Nick. Okay, and next question. Obviously, it's a big one for James. Favorite pizza toppings. I won't spend too long on this. You can't really beat a simple pepperoni, in my opinion, or American hot pepperoni jalapenos. That'll do me nicely. Okay, one more that I missed. Last question here, and it's from Cameron. If Val is sat, which seems to be what everyone wants now, where do you predict we'll be, say, a year from now? Good question again. Tough one, but you know, at the moment, I don't see a massive change of fortunes, regardless of who's in. There's a ceiling and a floor below us that are attainable potentially with a change of coach. I think ultimately we're going to find ourselves within the same position in only a matter of time. I don't think it's sustainable to expect any real progression, whether that be kind of short-term, quick progression, or even kind of longer-term incremental improvement, I think we'll struggle to really see that by just changing the coach alone. So, I see us around here potentially, maybe a little bit higher, maybe a little bit lower. I think we'll survive this season, but I don't see us really pushing too much further on. I don't have faith in the work we're going to be doing off season. I've said this before, but I still think we're at least, four, potentially five, six windows away from making this team, and with real intent as well, real structure, real planning, real intent to change things and improve things and rectify some things of turning this around. Nani's a short-term option in there as director of football. That's going to have to be someone that has a longer term viewpoint, that is able to kind of instill these things and have that coordination with the coach, the coaching staff, the other kind of areas and elements off the field that have to be part of that process. And it's something that's going to take a while. So we could be surprised. There could be some action which takes place and we find ourselves, with a director of football that's coming in with a strategy and is able to implement it early on. But at the moment, I see us being around here unless we do something drastic, which kind of has to happen pretty quickly if it's going to have an impact on this window coming up, because the summer window is rolling around the corner and we're probably, at least 6 months behind in where we should be. So yeah, not to be negative on that, I hope I'm wrong. I've been wrong before, of course, so hopefully I'm wrong again. But yeah, that's where I think we are. Okay, so we've covered all the questions. Again, thank you so much for getting those in. We really appreciate that. And it keeps this, what's what we want to do, is what we find enjoyable. And like, obviously we love speaking to you guys and having that interaction. So really appreciate the questions. Keep them coming in, whether we ask them or not. If you have a question, send it over to one of us or onto the Watford Buzz Twitter page, and we'll answer it, whether it's private DM or comment or whatever you like, and we'll make sure we get to that. And then, okay, so next, obviously, we'll talk about real quick coming up. Obviously, we've got a game or two games now in quick succession. So double sessions didn't work. Triple session opportunity is limited. So I think we're going to find ourselves back into a tough situation with a game. Two home games, isn't it, of course, as well, on Wednesday and Saturday. I haven't got any real clarity on injury situation right now. I'm not sure if there's anyone particularly that's going to be missing. I know Shakhtar Tadze was out. I'm not sure if he's going to be back in time for this next one. But how are we feeling? Not overly confident at the moment. I think we've got a lot to go through, a lot to rectify and try and get right before, two what feel like relatively crucial home games now. We've got some brutal fixtures coming up. Coventry are obviously a tough team to play on the Saturday, but Wednesday before that, we've got Swansea. Oof, I don't know. I mean, I just want to see a difference in terms of application. Maybe we'll see some tactical changes, some adjustments, but we need a better start. Obviously, games starting really poorly. It started particularly poorly against Millwall, kind of awful opening few minutes. That can't really happen against Swansea, or Coventry. So this is our opportunity. This is a little block of games here, Swansea, Coventry, and then Birmingham, where not easy games, of course, but the ones following are particularly brutal. So just hope we can have something to cheer on a little bit and we get to see something at home, which is somewhat positive, because the most recent home performances did not make you feel overly confident about this one coming up. So yeah, I won't harp on it too much because it's only a couple of days before it kind of kicks off, and I don't make this podcast too long. But Swansea, as a team, what are we going to expect? We're going to expect high fullbacks, use of those wing backs up high at the pitch, going to be looking to dominate the ball against us. I'm sure that counter-attacking style is going to be, something they're going to be working on for a team like us that struggles to dominate, struggles to control, or at least with any sort of intent to break down the opposition and kind of penetrate. So yeah, interesting game. I think it's going to be a close one, but one that Swansea will come into and think they can potentially apply some of that pressure that we've seen us crumble against in recent weeks. So yeah, that's kind of all I'm going to do for today. Again, thanks for the questions. Appreciate you guys getting in touch and reaching out. And appreciate you listening to me ramble on for 30 minutes. I think it's been at least 30 minutes now. Yeah, 30 minutes. So I'm going to let this one end. Thanks again for everything. And I will be back, hopefully, with a partner in Matt and Tom for the next one. I've been the Watford Buzz, I guess, today. And I'll see you next time. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.